Okay. So I will start by asking if there are any announcements. Well, this is Tamara from, we have two. One is that the Tri-Agency Climate Change Education PI meeting is going to be next week in Arlington. It will go on whether the government is functioning or not. They've sort of figured out contingencies that if the program officers are not able to be there, there are people who don't actually work for the federal government that can facilitate it moving forward. So that's all going to happen. And then right on the heels of that, they actually overlap by a day, is the NAAE meeting, North American Association for Environmental Education. And we have quite a few presentations from the Clean Network that are going to be there, and I think I sent out an email yesterday with the latest flyer. We actually have had some people give us more information since then, but we are updating the flyer with everybody's presentation so that they can be distributed during the meeting. I do know that if the government is functioning, there will be a NASA NICE booth, and there will be a NOAA booth. And we can put our flyers out there. If the government is not functioning, those are open spaces where we can use them if we want, I suppose.
Actually, excuse me, the NICE booth will be there no matter what.
Oh, really? Okay, great.
Yeah, because Virginia Space Grant is actually putting it up.
Oh, I see. Great. So I'm glad to hear that that's there. So I will be bringing you some of the flyers. Frank Neepel told me yesterday that the NOAA booth, if the government does shut down, which it did, there'll be an open space there. Yes.
Okay, Kathy. Once you did the record, my connection was hung up on, so I just called back in.
Did I do the record? Are we recording?
Well, we are now.
Yeah, you did.
Okay, did anyone else get disconnected when she did that?
I did, but I think it was because I wasn't fast enough on pressing one. I should know better.
No, it just hung me up. So anyway, okay, I'm back.
Okay, great. Okay, so before we move on to our presentation, are there any other announcements? Okay, well, we'll move on to the presentation, just so everybody, make sure everybody knows, if you go to the Clean Network page, the slides are there so that you can download them and go through them as Kathy presents them. So today we have Kathy McLaughlin from Project Learning Tree, and she's going to be talking about Project Learning Tree in the context of how it's organized and the trainings it provides. Kathy joined Project Learning Tree in 1986, but she's also been involved as a past president and former board member of the North American Association for Environmental Education, NAAE, and has been involved in environmental education and literacy efforts for quite a long time. So she's going to, again, like I said, talk about Project Learning Tree. So, Kathy, with that, I will turn it over to you. If you could please refer to the slide numbers as you go through so that if people come in late or get lost, they can
sure.
Can,
and
can
my
catch
problem
up.
Is I cannot seem to get it from your website. I'm on your website. I redid that thing, but when I click on slides, it just, let's see, it just shows the abstract.
Sorry, got it.
Yep.
That's down near the bottom.
Yep, I got it. Sorry, I'm stupid.
Okay, good.
We didn't rehearse this.
Yeah, there we go. Okay, sorry about that. Well, good afternoon, everyone, and thank you all for wanting to hear a little bit about how we're involved in curriculum development. And I know from my conversations with some of your leadership here, Scott and Tamara, and then having spoken with Bora as well, there's some interest on the part of this network to think about how do we address climate change literacy and how can we get this into hands of more educators across the country. And so taking a look at what one example of an environmental education program has been doing, I think, is a good idea. So I appreciate the opportunity to share our experiences with you. I will also say that while it's hard on a conference call to interrupt me, I will try to pause and certainly pay attention to folks, and I'm happy to be interrupted. I will also be happy to take questions at the end as well. So let me just start by slide two, this is just a little bit about who we are. Let me just ask for my help here on the phone. How many of you have heard of Project Learning Tree before?
Well, I certainly have.
I have.
Okay. So, just so you know, there's 10 people on the phone. So
10 on the call. Okay. All right. How about this? Anyone not heard of it until this email came across about today's lecture conversation? Okay. Well, I'm glad to hear that. We have been around for a long time.
Okay.
So that's good news. And I'm sure some of you have your understanding of what PLT is, and so. I come across folks all the time that have a perception or thinking about what PLT is, and usually it's correct. Sometimes there's missing information, so let me bring you guys all up to speed on kind of where we are today and some of where we're going. So just briefly, we are under the American Forest Foundation, which is a nonprofit. It basically runs two distinct programs. Project Learning Tree is one of them, and another is the American Forest Tree Farm System, a program that works for with private landowners, individuals who own or manage woodlands. So I'm going to focus, of course, today on Project Learning Tree. And so at the national level, that's who's kind of our, who houses us here in Washington, D.C. as a 501c3. And like any 501c3, we raise money from all different sources, including government funds, foundations, corporate contributions, individuals, and then revenue we can generate from the implementation of our program. So I'll now move on to slide two and just a little bit about us. You know, our name is telling, right? You see the word tree in there and project and learning, and so that perhaps gives you some clue about who we are, but it's also not the complete picture. We are a comprehensive environmental education program. That is, it's not just about trees, but it covers all aspects of our both our built environment and our natural environment. But when I think about Project Learning Tree, and I try to describe what it is because, you know, this name Project Learning Tree is sort of iconic, been around a long time, and it, you know, may say different things to different folks. What I think about is sort of this image of a three-legged stool. And, of course, Bora, you've heard me say this before, so sorry about that. But
really?
It's sort of three parts to our program, and all of them are interactive and depend on each other. We couldn't be the program we are, and I think, frankly, have been around since the program first began in the early 1970s, if these three pieces weren't a part of the program. So that is, we have a national and international network of folks who are engaged in the program. I'll speak to each of these three legs of the stool as we go along. Our second important piece is that we have an implementation system set up. And I like to say on this, we don't just, and I say just in quotes here and not to be negative about it because we also post things on the web, but it's not just available on the web. We have a whole system in place for delivering our programs and materials to professional educators and others. And then the third important piece is we have stuff. You know, we have materials that this national and international network uses because they receive them through this professional development system. So that's my three-legged stool, and I'll go through each of those parts as we move along. So the next slide, then, is about who we are, a little bit more about who we are. And, of course, This mission should look familiar to those of you who are familiar with what environmental education is. And certainly as you're looking at climate literacy, these are important concepts, I would think, for any of the work you're doing as well. But, you know, as again, trees are in our name, and the way we look at it is PLT uses the forest as sort of a window on the world to really look at helping students better understand our complex environment. We're really about getting them to do some thinking about that, using critical thinking skills, creative thinking, all the kinds of things that are important as we look at what good education is all about. We want the students to really develop the ability to make, you know, really informed decisions. I mean, I think empathy is important and affect is important, but we also want them to be able to make decisions based on understanding the complexities of issues. They still may come down on the side of their emotions leading their decision, but they've at least been aware that they're looking at sort of all sides of complex issues. And then, as in all environmental education programs, the notion is to really build in these students the confidence and the commitment to take action. We can't tell kids what to do or students what to do or really even teachers what to do, but we can hope that they will see the value in taking action on their own based on what it is they have learned. So that's really what we're trying to do, is have what I would then term, and I think Bora would agree, an environmentally literate citizenry. Just as you want a citizenry that's climate change literate, these kinds of same ideas I think would be important in any of the work that you're engaged in. A little bit of the past, as it tells where we're going in the future and how we got to where we are. I said we've been around since the early 1970s, and what's exciting to me about that is that it's still here, and the basic, I'll use the word core values, everybody's using that these days, but the core values are still in place today, and that is back in the 70s, some very prescient leaders, including Rudy Schaefer from the California Department of Education and others from basically out west it started, said, you know what, we've got some critical environmental issues going on in the world around us. How do we improve our education to address those environmental issues? And the important thing that the leadership did in the development of this program is they said, we don't have all the answers. And it is an education responsibility. Our teachers and students ought to be learning these kinds of things, but we don't only own that issue. We need help from folks who understand what's going on in the environment. So they very importantly brought in resource managers, content specialists, people who knew what was going on in the environment, working with people who know what goes on in classrooms. You know, two different kinds of skill sets, right? Some people, you know, kind of a two-hat sort of idea. Of course, there are certainly content experts who are also smart about how to teach students and how to teach teachers, but not all of them. And the same is true with educators. They may be great teachers, but they may not have all the content and knowledge to best address the important environmental issues. So they said, let's work together on this, and let's create a program writ large that will address developing this understanding of young people in the environment. And so it began with what was then a grant from, Health Education and Welfare? Health Education and Welfare gave a grant to this organization that called themselves the Western Regional Environmental Education Council. And it was made up of a State Department of Education person in charge of basically the environment and science, and a natural resource state agency person also concerned about education about the environment. These 26 members then formed this council, and under their leadership, they developed Project Learning Tree, working with additional partners. So then it first became implemented in those 13 Western states, starting in 1976. And then, and Bora, you can jump in here, 1977 came to Wisconsin, where I worked for the National Audubon Society, and I was trained in PLT, so it started to move across the country. Bora, were you in New Jersey then, or?
No, I was in California, so
you were
I was
still
trained
in California.
Yep.
You
I was trained in 77, yeah.
Okay, great, great. So it slowly creeped across the country because the Department of Education people and the State Resource Agency folks would talk to their counterparts in other states and say, hey, we've got this great program. We're working with teachers. You ought to take a look at it. And so it really spread across the country really by kind of word of mouth. And finally, in when I came on board in 85, we were in about 30-some states. And so since then, we worked to add the remaining states into the network. And I love this. Anyone on the phone from Missouri? Good. So the Show Me State waited till the last. They were the 50th state to join the program, which I thought was cute. Just a couple other historical things with PLT. I'll talk specifically about some of our materials. But in 92, between 1976 and 1992, we'd made some changes to the guide, some cosmetic changes and some other things. And then in 1990 began a huge overhaul and revision to all of the materials that we had. And I'll get into that in a little bit. But we also started a program called GreenWorks, which is a service learning component for PLT, getting students and their teachers who are incorporating EE into their curriculum and their lessons and such to say, all right, how do we now take action? And so these GreenWorks grants supported them through small grants, allowing them to take action in their local communities. So some place-based projects took place. They might do a streamside cleanup or maybe set up a recycling center, or now it might be trying to reduce their carbon footprint through the GreenWorks grants. And I'll again talk a little bit more about that later. So then in 93, these new materials came out and they were revamped into a pre-K to 8 guide and then several secondary modules. And so I think when folks think today, anyway, about PLT, they're probably thinking mostly about the pre-K-8. Lots of people aren't aware of the secondary materials that we also have. Then in 2006, we did another huge revision to the pre-K-8 guide and then continued development of new secondary modules. 2008, we added a program we call Green Schools, which took a program we had called PLT Whole Schools and really transformed that into schools turning green. I'll talk a little bit more about that later. And then in 2010, we took our pre-K program and really said, what do we need to do to better reach the pre-K audience? And so came out with a new early childhood guide. And I'm assuming that most of you folks on the phone have also heard about Project Wild and Project Wet. And both of those programs were co-created by that same organization, REEC, the Western Regional Environmental Education Council, that first developed PLT. And the REEC organization, you know, thought that PLT was a good idea, and they worked to create two more great curriculum projects. And so we share a lot of the same state sponsors and implementation and that as we go around the country. Okay, so what are we all about? This, again, those of you familiar with what environmental education is will see this. This is the traditional way of taking a look at what we try to do with EE to have a environmentally literate citizenry. At the end is that, you know, developing awareness about the world around them, developing skills and knowledge to better understand that what's going on. You know, it's great to be aware of it, something, but then let's find out more about it. And then let's challenge our thinking. Well, geez, I was aware of this. I didn't really understand it. Now I see this differently. Wouldn't it be great if all of the members of Congress could challenge their preconceived ideas on climate change, just as an example? And then after that, you know, that's when you can then take responsible action. So that's kind of the pattern that we look at in the development of all of our curriculum materials, helping to develop an awareness of the world around us, a responsibility for it. And we use this little quote from Rudy Schaefer, who was at the California Department of Education and the founder of Project Learning Tree and REEC. You know, we're about helping teach students how to think, not what to think about complex environmental issues. And that's really critical if we want to be in classrooms. It cannot be an advocacy program. It has to be an education program. And that's hard sometimes. We have an essay in the back of our PLT materials called Two Hats that was written by Dr. John Hugg, who was at the Ohio State Department of Education. And he talks about, you know, those of us who care about the environment and care about doing this may be in our personal lives environmental lists, whatever that might be. But when we go into the classroom, we take that hat off and we put our educator hat on. So we have to walk that line of between education and advocacy. Okay, so given all of that little background, let me now talk about this stool of ours. So I'll just start with the network. So now I'm on slide 7. And we, as I said earlier, we're around the country in the District of Columbia. We're also partnering in several other countries around the world, and we work with the Peace Corps and a lot of the volunteers that go in country take PLT with them and use it. I kind of hate to start with a national PLT because I really think I should flip this list around, but I'm in the national office. We're based here in Washington, D.C. There are 5 of us on the staff. We're responsible for helping to create the curriculum materials, the support materials for our national network, all the tools that are available to our states to run their programs and other things, other duties as assigned. I report to a National Education Operating Committee, and full disclosure, Bora is on that, so she gets to tell me what to do. Operating committee is made up of experts like Bora, other leaders in education and resource management around the country. You can see our list on our website. But great folks who get together 2 or 3 times a year to help guide the direction that the National Project Learning Tree program takes. So, for example, the last couple of years they've been fully engaged in a strategic plan for Project Learning Tree. We're just in year 1.5 of that plan, taking us through 2015, and it's really exciting. Some great new things are about to come down for PLT, thanks to the great leadership of this National Operating Committee. We then work with state sponsors. So obviously, we here in the D.C. office can't run a national program. You know, not when teachers, you know, work at the district level or the school level and making decisions about what happens in their classroom. I can't, you know, really effectively run a national program from my little catbird seat here in D.C. So we need people at the state and local level to implement the program. So in each of the 50 states in the District of Columbia, we have state sponsors running our programs. These folks may be with departments of education, departments of natural resources, colleges and universities, nonprofit organizations. You can go to our website and click on your state and find out who in your state is responsible for running the program.
Can I just interrupt a second? When you say running the program, do you mean providing the professional development and materials, or do you mean raising money to enable that to happen?
All of the above. When we have an MOU with each of our state sponsors, and the MOU spells out the responsibilities of the national office and the responsibility of the state sponsors. PLT National Office provides services to our partners, including the printing of curriculum materials that are then sold to the state partners at a very reasonable cost. I mean, it's not like, you know, we're not looking to make money off our state partners. So because we can print at, you know, a large quantity, puts the per copy cost down, and then we can deliver the materials to them that way. But the state sponsors hire or assign staff members to be the state PLT coordinators, which I was going to get to in just a second. But it's up to the state sponsors to manage the PLT program working under an MOU with us that, you know, calls for some rather, you know, easy to accomplish guidelines, things like providing the national office with an annual report of the what they've done with the program that year, participating in the annual professional development for the state coordinator, following the guidelines that we set up for our professional development and distribution of the programs and materials, establishing a state-based website or linking to our website so that folks can find the PLT program in their state, posting workshops, that sort of thing.
And Kathy, this is Roberta Burns in Kentucky. I'm on the board of the Kentucky Association for Environmental Education, and we are the state partner, as you know, Kathy. We are the state partner for Kentucky. So we do all those things, and we are trying to assemble a database, for instance, of all the people in the state that are trained as facilitators for Project Learning Tree, so that when a teacher calls from, you know, Eastern Kentucky and says, you know, I've got a bunch of teachers that want to learn this project, that want to get certified in it and get the books, we can then send out a call to our network statewide and find a facilitator to do the workshop, and we handle the ordering of the books from national and, you know, set the cost of the workshop or find, you know, somebody to pay for the workshop, some sponsor, to cover the cost.
Perfect, Roberta. Thanks. And so,
Kathy,
Roberta,
here.
All that I'm sorry?
Well, Kathy, I just wanted to ask, this is Scott Carley, I'm just curious whether the curriculum is the same nationally or are there state variations?
Sure. Good question. And how about if we hold that till I get to the curriculum?
Not a problem. Just curious about that.
Because that's a really important question when you're looking at a national program. So the answer is, it's both a national program and there are state program state materials, so I'll get to that. That's a great question. So state sponsors like the Kentucky Association for Environmental Education, Roberta, thank you so much, and then our state sponsors typically establish a state steering committee or use an existing, it might be a board of directors, I think that's what you call yourselves in Kentucky, right? It's the board of directors for
right.
Kentucky, yeah. So, you know, whether there's an existing group to sort of oversee the directions that the PLT program takes in that state. Just like I have a national operating committee, we encourage that kind of leadership team at the state level, too. You know, they keep a pulse on what's going on in the state. Where are there some priority areas? What's, you know, how do we best manage this program? And they often are the ones, for example, that help with fundraising or selection of facilitators or other parts of the program. Then state coordinators. So, again, the state sponsors are responsible for assigning, and I say that because I do not hire the coordinators. I don't pay for the coordinators, you know, from the national office. That is all a state responsibility. And so it varies, as you might imagine, in all of the 51 states. We have full-time PLT-only coordinators to 5% of their job description. So it's a huge range, and as you might imagine then with that, there are different levels of activity going on depending on the available resources and capacity in a particular state. What Roberta mentioned as well is, so then it's important. Again, just like I can't run all the workshops around the country, neither can a state coordinator run all of the professional development in his or her state. So typically what happens is there is a cadre of what we call facilitators. Those are folks who take the PLT curriculum materials and provide them to professional educators in professional development workshops. They might be, for example, a college professor of a methods course for science methods for pre-service educators, and they may integrate PLT into their semester-long course for their pre-service students. It might be a science curriculum coordinator at a district level who provides Project Learning Tree to his or her teachers in an in-service training day for prior to school starting. It might be a naturalist at a local nature center who does outreach to the their community and provides teacher professional development, and they use PLT as one of their tools. So it's really a whole range of different kinds of folks who are our facilitators in the state. And each state manages that network of facilitators in their own way. Some facilitators are paid. Some are totally volunteer for that program. They're probably, you know, doing it as a part of their job, but the state program isn't covering their expenses. Some state programs cover things like travel expenses and meals and whatnot, but it varies according to each state. And again, just as Roberta said, it's up to state programs to establish a workshop fee or a professional development fee. We at the national office encourage states to do that because we think what they're offering has value, and teachers should and could be able to afford to pay for that. So we encourage our state partners to really examine their procedures for covering their expenses at the state. It used to be that most PLT was offered free of charge, and, you know, that's not very sustainable. So over the last probably 20 years, that has been changing. I think we still have a few holdouts where they feel like they have enough resources in their state to be able to provide it free of charge to teachers, but that's not the rule. That's an exception. Okay. Oh, my computer just went to sleep. That means it's time to move on to another slide. So then the facilitators, again, educate teachers, and I'm using the word teachers here. It could be a formal educator, a K-12 classroom teacher, or it could be a nature center naturalist or a zoo educator or a museum docent. So it's both formal and non-formal folks participate in these workshops, who in turn then, when they receive the materials in a workshop, have the, we hope, the commitment to then use those materials as appropriate with the students that they reach. So this is just the next slide, which is slide 8, is just a small example of some of the partners that we work with to deliver our program.
This is Tamara. Can I just ask you a quick question about
Sure.
that last thing? Do you have,
Yep.
do you kind of ask maybe later on down the line if teachers have actually implemented with students, since you don't
Oh, yes.
actually require?
Yes. Yes.
So
yes,
do you have a
do.
Sense of, like, what percentage actually do?
Yes, actually, we do. We have done, and these survey instruments and the evaluation we've done, and I think Bora can attest to this, a really exhaustive body of evaluation on Project Learning Tree, both the materials themselves, the efficacy of the materials, as well as the use by teachers. I was just up in New York State this last week, and they're just in the midst of doing a survey of their educators. Our state partners like to periodically go back to the educators that they've reached and ask them those kinds of questions. Generally, what I can say is it's a very high percentage of teachers who report having used PLT in their teaching. The ones who don't are pretty standard kinds of reasons why not. They've changed jobs. Their course has changed. Their responsibilities have changed. We do get the not enough time because they're teaching the standards, and I'll get to that when we get to the standards. But we feel very fortunate that the folks who participate in our trainings are using our materials. We have a pretty high level of confidence on that based on our evaluations. And I'd be happy to, and Bora, maybe you can help me out with this one, direct folks to any particular studies that might be useful as you move forward on this. I actually didn't put any slides in here on our evaluation. I probably should have done that. We can come back to that on other questions as we move along, too, in talking about the curriculum.
Mm-hmm.
But
okay,
yes.
Thanks.
Sure. Okay, so then slide 8 is the kinds of partners that we work with. And they ask that same question, whoever it was, at Tamara, I think, just asked that. You know,
yes.
You don't want to work with programs if you don't think it's effective, right? You know, it's one thing to, you know, have a teacher go to a workshop, and then how do we know whether they're using it or not? And so that's why we've actually invested a lot of resources into finding out, are they using it? We also do the both intent to act which is, again, I'm not an evaluation expert, but I work with folks who are, and that's a good indicator of, you know, future use as well, or at least we can use that. And Bora, again, help me out here if needed. But we do ask that after the workshop, their intent to use, and then when we can go back and find out whether they actually did. I have 88 state partners because there aren't 88 states, but in each state, sometimes there is more than one partner running the program. So it depends on the state, and you will see that if you go to your own state. Maybe there will be more than one coordinator listed there. And we think that's important because, as you might imagine, resource agencies, for example, their priorities and budgets change over time. And so what we have found is it's diversity is important. You know, if one organization has to take a step back because of budget cuts, there are others there to step in and help out. So we have found that to be an important piece to our implementation of broadening our network to assure longevity. Okay, let me then go to that second leg, and this gets to some of the, you know, questions in that on so what. You know, we have this network, and what do they do with it? And so I mentioned our facilitators. That's that train-the-trainer model, where those are the folks who are going to be using it with other adults, and they are the ones who then deliver the workshops at the local level. And there's about 1,500 of these professional development experiences going on an annual basis around the country. And I mentioned in professional development, there's lots of different ways of getting at that. And one of the exciting things that we're doing right now is reevaluating our PD models and taking a look at what exactly is going on around the country, you know, the different kinds of experiences that folks are having. And we're doing a huge new evaluation. In fact, tomorrow I'll be all day with some evaluators that we've hired, peer researchers from, they're up in New Hampshire, and they're coming down to provide guidance for us on what we've already found out, but then help guide the direction over this next year of evaluating the actual PD models that we have. So I'll be able to give you some more information. You know, is it more effective if a teacher went through an in-service training versus several hours after school versus they took it in college, you know, and all the different ways that one can get the materials, whether it's an online, you know, are they using it if they went to an online workshop, those kinds of things. So, you know, more than half of the teachers have told us that, you know, at least 6 times a year. So what does that really mean, you know, in terms of how effective are we? I'll leave that to others to decide. But, you know, if we're getting folks to be using the materials and making a difference in their curriculum, I think we're getting there. Would we like to see more and deeper engagement? Yes. And that's one of the things that our strategic plan is calling for. Okay, now let me move on to the actual stuff that we have. This is that third leg of the stool. So we do have materials for pre-K to 8. We have a Green Schools program, and we have materials for high school educators. So I'll start with, on slide 11, I want to just talk to you a little bit about our curriculum development process. I won't go into great detail on all 13 of these steps, but just to give you a picture of this, you know, I, those of you who have heard me talk about our curriculum development process probably heard me say this before, but, you know, I fly a lot. I go a lot around the country, and I'm on airplanes all the time. And one of the things that I remember hearing when I first got into curriculum development was, oh, our materials were developed by teachers for teachers. And I'm... okay, you know, I say to that, and then I'm sitting on a plane, I think, yeah, so my plane was built by pilots for pilots. That's not what I want to hear. You know, I want to hear that engineers took a look at this, that people who understand, you know, aerodynamics and engineering, all that, built that plane. And yes, maybe they consulted with pilots as to what makes sense for them up in the cockpit and, you know, where should instruments be placed and all that. But I feel the same way about curriculum development. I have my master's in curriculum development. I think there's others on the phone who are experts in that. And I think we absolutely need to work with educators, people who are in the classroom on the ground, but I think we need to work with others as well. And that's been a real critical piece of PLT from the very beginning. As I mentioned earlier, that sort of core group who got together to develop PLT, they said, look, you know, we've got to really bring folks in who know about what goes on in the classroom, but also what goes on in the field. So this whole process kind of follows the EE professional or the EE curriculum development guidelines. We really work on, you know, identifying the need. The advisory committee says, you know, what's the need? Who should be working on this? We establish a formative and summative evaluation plan at the very beginning, so we're constantly looking at what we're doing. Focus groups, drafts, teachers' pilot tests, do they work with kids? They're reviewed by professionals, revised edit, design, blah, blah, blah. Then we do the summative evaluation. So we have summative evaluations on all of our curriculum materials. That is, teachers did a pre-test, post-test, qualitative, quasi-experimental design, which we're really proud that we have both spent the money on that with PLT and gotten excellent results on all of our materials, that what we say the activities are going to do prove to be the case when teachers teach the lessons. So that's our complicated, exhaustive process, and it takes a lot of time. And so the question earlier about are these national materials or state-based materials, this is where this comes in. They're developed nationally, but with folks from all over the country, so viewpoints, content is sort of taking a look so that there's applicability across the country. The content itself is, there is some content, obviously, I'm sure you all would agree, that's sort of national. It doesn't mean, you know, you need Kentucky-specific information on every kind of environmental issue, but certainly it's important to have Kentucky-specific information. That's where our partners come in. So one of the responsibilities of the partners is to say, here is this set of curriculum, supplementary curriculum materials that are tied to national standards, tied to our state standards, but what do we need to do to make it content specific to the place where we're teaching this? And that can be as place-based as, you know, a school site or a region of a state or a state. So that kind of specific content comes at the state and local level. So many of our state programs, for example, have created supplementary content packets to go along with their materials. And I'll talk in just a minute about a climate change product that we're working on that is Southern specific.
So this is Tamara. Can I just ask a quick question? How
sure.
Is this funded by funds provided by the state partners, or I forget what the term you use for them, or do you apply for grants to fund the development of the materials?
Well, the national materials, or are you referring to any state-based or local-based materials?
Well, both.
So national, we're a nonprofit, so we seek funds from, as I said at the beginning, you know, government funds, foundations, corporate, individuals. So those materials are paid for at the national office. If a state wants to create a state-specific supplement to PLT's materials, that would be their responsibility to find those funds. We do at the national office have a program we call the Model Program Initiative, where we provide grants to our state partners, and I believe that Kentucky got one last year, if I recall correctly, or anyway. And
yeah,
that
we got
is
a grant.
Good. Glad to hear it.
And I don't know if it was, I think it was it was more for training than to develop Kentucky-specific materials.
Yeah. But that is possible, but otherwise the states would, you know, take that on. And frankly, a lot of that content information is already available in the states. You know, again, we work with state resource agencies as well, and there's a lot of content there. And so states don't have to create new stuff necessarily, but rather make sure it's aligned and connected to specific lessons. As well, on our website, each of our lessons has additional resources available through the website. Some of these are links to websites, some are state-specific information. We try to personalize personalize those activities on our website as well to provide up-to-date kinds of information.
And I will say real quick, Kathy, that, you know, the model that I learned years and years ago was when you do one of these professional development workshops, that you're, as a facilitator, you're always encouraged to bring in local experts that can put all of this stuff in the context of your local environment. And so that's where that local piece comes in often. It's not necessarily provided by the national curriculum per se, but in the broader context. But.
Exactly. That's that local facilitator network that relies on who best to deliver this and what best to deliver. Exactly. Well, let me just quickly zip through these curriculum slides. So we have this environmental experiences for early childhood. We've got the pre-K to 8 guide with reading connections, technology, differentiated instruction. As I said, they are aligned to national and state standards. They're aligned right now to Common Core, and we're working with the next generation science standards. Indoor, outdoor, interdisciplinary, you know, blah, blah, blah. We also have an energy and society kit with some updated information right now on our website. For example, we didn't have fracking in here, so there's some new information on that. But this is for basically a elementary middle school audience taking a look at energy challenges in our society. Certainly there's some connections to what you guys are talking about. In our secondary, we have a series of modules, topic-specific, lots of more depth in the content, fewer lessons, but more depth. A couple of them are available online only. I'm sorry, I'm now on slide 15. And then I just wanted, for purposes of our quick discussion, just to point out to you all that existing in our guide are lessons that address climate change. So I just did a kind of a little list here and wanted to point out on our website the Global Climate Activity. We recently did an update to that activity and posted it on our website dealing with the Arctic Sea. It's pretty exciting and has a lot of more current information than was published in our guide. And you're welcome to take a look at that on our website. We also partner with Rainforest Alliance and have done some work with them. At the secondary level, there's some specific climate change and forest activities, analyzing patterns of forest change. And then the one in development that I was mentioning that is a region-specific is a project we're doing with the University of Florida down in Gainesville, and they received a grant, and we're partnering with them and working with the southern states, and there's a project in development, and I put the website on here and would welcome your taking a look at it and giving us some feedback on that. It's just now going out for draft, and there's some nice experiences that teachers have been having with that, so we're kind of excited about that as a new model for us on how to take this complicated issue of climate change and make it a little more relevant to high school educators. And then I want to just wrap up with a couple of, in addition to our curriculum materials, we also have some sort of highlighted programs. GreenWorks, I'm now on slide 19, started in the 90s, and we make grants available for service learning projects, and I mentioned that earlier, and it's pretty exciting the kinds of things we're doing. Last night was the deadline, so my staff is busy downloading all the applications that came in, folks looking for support for their students to do some cool project-based work locally. We're also working with the Forest Service and Prince William Network, I'm now on slide 20, on a program they're supporting called Climate Change Live. And they're doing a series of webcasts and webinars and providing online climate education resources. I know NOAA is involved with that as well. PLT's role in this is that we are offering some GreenWorks grants that are specific to climate change, so reducing your carbon footprint or making some difference at your school or in your community as it relates to climate change. And those will be starting in 2014, being advertised kind of now, and we'll move forward. Our Green Schools program, we're really excited about that. Over 2,000 schools are online with us, and basically it's teachers who already are integrating E into their curriculum. How can they do more? And then getting their students involved in doing environmental investigations and then taking action to really create sustainable school environments. And there are 5 investigations, real connections to climate change. Obviously, a lot of our schools, for example, are focusing on the energy use in their school and reducing their carbon footprint. We've got the traditional carbon footprint, you know, measuring your carbon footprint stuff in there for kids and schools to do, taking a look at that. So as we look at the kinds of action that they're taking, that's often the one that they tackle first, which is exciting. The other sort of thing we do on the national level is service to both the teachers who attend the workshops and our partners is a quarterly newsletter. And I just, before our conference, I Googled climate change on that just to see the different references over the years in the branch to, you know, stories about climate change. But we provide additional resources for teachers, stuff going on in environmental education. And then our website, like all websites, can always use improvements, but we do have supplemental resources for each activity. We have PDFs of the student pages from all of our activities that teachers can download, as well as some additional curriculum materials that are downloadable and the standards correlations in that. And one of the things we're looking at as we move to the future is how better to use that web-based support. We also recognize outstanding educators, and then I'll just finish with a couple of things about us. And, you know, in terms of are people using it, one of the marks we feel of the value or use of PLT to educators is why are they coming to our workshops? Over 2/3 of them come because another educator recommended it, and that, you know, sort of word of mouth is a really critical piece to us. We don't have a marketing budget, you know, all those kinds of things. So that pleases us that teachers like it and they're telling their colleagues to get involved. Many of our schools were recognized by the Department of Education's Green Ribbon Schools program. We just had an event here in D.C. visiting one of PLT's green schools, which also received green ribbon status and had a nice event there the other day with the Department of Education, and given over lots of money to GreenWorks grants. And then we also support advocacy for environmental education. Remember earlier I said we can't tell people what to do, but we do advocate for good quality environmental education, and so we brought teachers in from around the country to go visit their representatives on the Hill. That won't happen for a while since it's a little dysfunctional there, but that kind of work to really lend support to our program. So.
Amazing.
So this is Tamara again. This is really impressive. Are the workshops, are these face-to-face workshops or online?
Yes.
Or a combination.
Yes.
Of both?
All of the above. More so face-to-face, Tamara, but more and more online are happening, and that is one of the directions that we're going to take in the future. We're working with our researchers and some market researchers on the best approaches in that PD, but we plan to do more of the online approach.
And how long are each of these workshops?
So that's another good question, and it's sort of all of the above. Workshops vary from an all-day teacher workshop where they come on a Saturday and spend the, you know, 6 hours with a facilitator to semester-long approaches to 2 hours a night for 3 or 4 nights, a whole range. We also, of course, take advantage of things like the National Science Teachers Association meeting, and we will do workshops and presentations there. We've got the North American Association for Environmental Ed is coming up, and we're going to be featuring our climate change materials at that conference, for example, and that's a half-day workshop? I can't remember what it is, but
when is it? Because we do, like I said, we do have a fire around climate change and climate education material presentations at NAAEE that we're going to have available, announcing it to everybody. So if you want to send us the information, we can add that to the list.
I'd be happy to do that. I'd be happy. Who should I send it to?
To me, Tamara.
Okay, Tamara, I will.
So just
will
find,
get
yeah,
that
just
out.
Find, just yeah, find
yeah.
The email for the
yep.
Yeah, that we got.
Yep, you can put that. So the other important thing on this is again in our strategic plan, we did a lot of research on professional development best practices, and of course, one of the things, and you guys have probably all heard this, is sustained and intensive. That's really critical to successful implementation of any new curriculum materials for educators. So the our PLT program is really tackling that. We're saying, well, what does that mean for PLT? You know, a lot of the research revolves, for example, around the school instituting, for example, a new math program, new textbooks, new, you know, that is a different kind of approach than what I think all of us are trying to do in climate change literacy or environmental education literacy, where we're supplementing a curriculum, we're not replacing a math program. So I feel like sustained and intensive has some different meanings depending on what outcomes you're looking for. So we're tying our own. Yes.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt.
That's all right.
What I was going to say is when we have done workshops, when I've done them in the past, we sort of had a formula, and I don't even know if this is codified anymore, but the formula was if you're doing one project, say Project Learning Tree, that there's a minimum of 6 hours of contact time with the people in the workshop. If you're combining projects, Project Learning Tree, Project Wild, into one workshop, then it was reduced to 4 hours per project, provided that you covered, you know, a minimum number of activities from each project. So there was an essential number of contact hours that you had to reach in order to have the right to have the curriculum book and be considered certified in that project.
Right, right. And, Roberta, you're absolutely right on that. And I think what we've seen over the years is that is a great model, but it isn't the only model. And so one of the things we're doing now is trying to put together best practices based on what outcome you're looking for. So the researchers were telling us that, you know, depending on what you want, will have an impact on the investment that a teacher and a facilitator should make in the program. And so that's what we're working on right now, and we'll be providing new guidelines for our national network as to here are different models depending on the outcomes that you're looking for, and basically giving choice to the state programs to say, you know what, we really like what we've been doing, we're going to keep with that model, but hey, let's add this other one in, and you know, maybe it's one that's a combines both online and in person, or you know, just the different ways of delivering the program. We've, you know, we've had a lot of years of this 6 hour workshop thinking, but all during that time, lots of other models were also occurring, and so folks, for just for example, folks would be critical and they say, oh, you know, PLT just does 6 hours, that's not enough, it should be intensive and sustained. Well, those were happening, week-long seminars in the summertime for teachers where PLT is a part of that PD during a week-long retreat for teachers over the summer. Those have always happened and will continue to happen. So I just think, you know, we need to think about what it is we want, what our outcomes are, and then design the workshop to best match those outcomes, and that's the sort of new approach that we'll be taking.
And I know we're running out of time, but does PLT, my understanding is that the project book itself is not available for purchase outright unless you've gone to some sort of a training. Is that correct?
Yeah, except it's never easy, right? Yeah. So our existing materials are the case, although we have some materials free online, like our biodiversity, the biotech, the new global climate change activity that's about Arctic Sea is on our website. There's a variety of places to get access to our materials, you know, without having gone to a workshop. We like the idea that we provide that PD along with the materials because, you know, just sending something out, you know, when people say, oh, we distributed 1,000 sets of lessons at an NSTA conference, I kind of raise my eyebrows and I think, great, and have you checked the recycling bin as you walked out the door? You know, if they don't know how to use it, they don't necessarily use it. And so our feeling has been that because we require this PD piece, they're more likely to use it. Doesn't mean that I couldn't hand the book to somebody and they know what they're doing and they're going to use it, but we've been pretty confident that PD helps.
Mm-hmm. And so you've talked about this is Tamara, you've talked about the train-the-trainer model. So do you have separate PD to help teachers become these trainers?
Yes, yes, yes.
Okay.
There's a whole facilitator program. We provide facilitator handbooks and guidelines, and they get a different type, obviously a more in-depth, and they get things like, you know, leadership skills, how to teach adults, you know, professional development for adult education leadership mm-hmm. skills.
Okay, great. Are there any other questions? We are a little bit past 2 o'clock Eastern time. So we're at the end of the hour, but if anybody has a last question.
And I'm happy to have any of you follow up, you know, send me an email and I'll do my best to help you out.
Right. Well, great. Well, thank you very much, Kathy. This was really very informative and helpful.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you, Kathy.
Thank you.
Thank you, everyone.
Okay.
Good luck. Hope to see
Same
some of you up in Baltimore.
You too.
Definitely.
We'll certainly be there.
Okay, good. Well, let's look for each other. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye now.
Bye everybody.